From WBUR in Boston, it's Weekly Warm-Up, a sampling of the cornucopia of stories and interviews featured on Only a Game, sports public radio style.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Visa, offering the Visa Signature Card, featuring concierge services for travel, dining, and entertainment at visasignature.com.
Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
If you were to characterize the women of Duke as sharpshooters, I'd agree with you. Ditto for the Oregon men's basketball team. But one team of collegiate Deadeyes has already won its respective NCAA tournament. From member station KUAC in Fairbanks, Alaska, Libby Casey reports.
Picture a college athlete, and you're likely to imagine action. A basketball player making the fast break, or a skier sprinting to the finish. You're not likely to see someone standing virtually still for hours at a time. But that's exactly what the rifle team does.
For your first competition shot, load.
I think shooting's like 90% mental, and only about 10% physical.
Becky Hirschberger is a freshman at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, or UAF. She says the key to shooting a perfect 10 is clearing her head.
As soon as I pick up the rifle and begin my shot process, I don't think about anything. My mind just goes blank. I just concentrate on shooting the shot. But like in between picking up the rifle and shooting, like I'll be singing a song in my head. It's all kinds of jumbled up thoughts, but then nothing.
Team members had their ability to focus put to the test last weekend when, for the first time, Fairbanks hosted the NCAA National Collegiate Rifle Championship. With more than 1,000 people in the stands, it was the biggest rifle match in NCAA history.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to announce the 2007 National Rifle Champion, the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
NCAA committee member Paul Klamaitis traveled from Philadelphia to Alaska for the championship. He says shooting is truly a co-ed sport. Some top teams are made up entirely of women.
People don't understand how great this sport is. It's one of the very few sports that men and women compete equally. Eyeball to eyeball, shoulder to shoulder, and nobody's saying, oh, look, it's a girl.
Alaska's co-ed team makes shooting look simple when they score tens shot after shot. German Matthias Dierolf is one of UAF's top competitors.
Actually, shooting is pretty easy. If you know how to shoot a 10, just do it 60 times and you have a perfect score. In real life, unfortunately, it's not that easy.
For a perfect score, shooters must hit a half-millimeter spot, the size of a period, in a target 10 meters away. Dierolf demonstrates his technique.
Before I take my rifle up, I make sure my body's lined up. I want to make sure my hips are lined up. I want to make sure my shoulders are lined up. When I pick up the rifle, I only use my upper body, all my lower body. It stays exactly the same position all the way through. Squeeze the trigger and shoot.
And you do that again and again. The team practices for hours, but Dierolf says don't expect to see them lifting weights at the gym.
It's really important for us to feel the muscles, feel the small difference in the tension in the muscle, feel the tremor, and I think lifting weights, really working out, is not good for it. However, I think it's really important to be in a good endurance shape because some matches last for about 4 hours.
Freshman teammate Jace Burrish says holding up a 10 to 16 pound gun takes stamina.
There's a lot of fine tuning, really small amounts of muscle, I guess, that trigger a lot of things. In football and stuff like that, you have these big muscles in your legs, you know, you run fast. But here it's just small muscles that control everything.
Control is the key word. Shooters are so precise that they fire between breaths. Burrish says many monitor their own pulse before pulling the trigger.
If you shot during a heartbeat, it could jump your gun up and you could lose 2 points just because of a heartbeat.
Burrish's coach understands just how hard a sport this is. Dan Jordan has coached the squad for 2 seasons, but a decade ago, he was on the Fairbanks team. A serious climbing accident took him out of competition for a few years and left him in a wheelchair. But Jordan returned to shooting and won a silver medal at the 2004 Paralympics in Athens.
The top shooters really gain a real working knowledge of their bodies, and you can mentally control your heartbeat and slow it down. You can lower your blood pressure. When I got hurt and I was in the hospital and hooked up to all the machines, I'd mess with the nurses by jacking my heart rate way up or dropping it down low and changing my blood pressure and stuff like that.
Coach Jordan says such self-control gives a shooter an edge over the competition. Shooters usually peak in their late 20s, so college is a time to help them perfect their technique and gain confidence. Jordan looks the world over to recruit shooters with the most potential, but first he has to convince them to move to the middle of Alaska.
We all kind of joke, it's almost recruiting the parents as much as it is the kids. It's hard to get somebody from the East Coast to let their child go to Alaska, you know, right out of high school and stuff. So you really got to convince them and tell them that it's what's best for their kid also.
Jordan hopes talent continues to come north to be on one of the best teams in the world. The students who make it to UAF are in the pipeline to compete in the Olympics, but the squad says it's just as meaningful to represent your team at NCAAs. After all, few are lucky enough and talented enough to continue a winning streak like this one, 8 out of the last 9 championships, with even more to come in their sights. For Only a Game, I'm Libby Casey in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Even the most casual observer knows that competitive ice skaters twirl, shimmy, and dance their way to glory. Those who have roller skated recall with affection cheesy get-ups and old-timey organ music. But what happens when you combine the two? Only a Game's Karen Given recently found out.
It's barely 7 on a warm Saturday morning, and the Roller Palace in Beverly, Massachusetts has been buzzing with excitement since 5:30. Call that the relative excitement of the figures competition at the Northeast Regional Midwinter Invitational. If it wasn't for the equipment on their feet, these skaters easily could be confused for their icier counterparts. The women are decked out in sequins and sparkles, short skating skirts, and matching boot covers. The men are in shoulder-to-toe spandex jumpsuits with more than a few sequins of their own. Compulsory figures were the bane of many an ice skater before they began to be phased out in the late 60s. But this morning, roller skaters are carefully tracing over circles, nearly 20 feet across, painted 3 in a row on the Roller Palace's wooden floor. 11-year-olds Amber and Allison are hanging out on the benches to the side of the rink, laughing while the medals around their necks clink together. Like everyone else, Amber is wearing makeup and sequins, but she bristles at the idea that she joined the sport for the sparkly outfits.
Well, I play basketball. Like, I love sports, other sports. And I'm not really a person that likes makeup or dresses, and this is the only time I put on a dress, except for, like, weddings. I just think it's really fun, and that's the only reason I put up with it, kind.
Allison and Amber's friends at school don't always understand why they spend so much time skating. But when the pair traveled to Nebraska for the national finals last summer, they met skaters from all over the country, and now they want everyone to try it.
It's just really a great experience, and you get to travel all over the place, and it's just really fun.
Like in Australia, Nebraska.
Not Australia,
yeah,
probably.
For world, if you make it
yeah,
into
world.
And the more that you go into different competitions, the more friends you get to make.
It's nice because you get to make friends with all different age groups,
oh, yeah.
Not just the ones you're in.
When Amber talks about making friends in all different age groups, she's referring to kids she might not necessarily play with at recess, not skaters like Colleen Reynolds from Hudson, New Hampshire. But bringing the generations together is exactly why Colleen's here.
I started 6 years ago to compete with my grandkids. But my coach actually is Bonnie Becker. She started with my youngest daughter, then had my grandchildren, then she got Grammy last. So she's had 3 generations of us.
Colleen didn't just find time with her grandkids at the rink. She also found friends like Cordelia McLeod, Dee Dee for short. Dee Dee's been on roller skates most of her life, but says she left the sport when she discovered boys and came back to it when she became interested in men. And she's never been embarrassed to tell people what she does in her spare time.
People that know me already know that that's my focus, that's my passion. A fellow that had been in my life for a long time, he came to watch me skate for something, and he said, "You really like to skate?" And I said, "Yeah, like you like your things." "No," he said, "you really like to skate." He said, "Your face just lights up when you skate." He said, "You just love it. This is my exercise. This is my fun. This is my focus and my time."
Dee Dee skates 4, sometimes 5 times a week. But these days, she's having more and more trouble finding a place to practice. When she was a kid, there was a rink in her town. When that closed, Dee Dee was able to go to larger cities in New Hampshire. Now, as the number of rinks diminishes, so does the number of skaters.
Sometimes we lose skaters because if a rink closes, it's so much farther for someone to go, so it makes it harder and harder. Myself, I live in New Hampshire, and I skate in Massachusetts because there are no longer any rinks in New Hampshire. So I skate in Tingsboro, which is about 40 minutes from my home. I suppose if I had the money, I'd build a rink, but I'm spending my money skating instead.
Some of the morning's events only have 1 or 2 competitors. Even the larger groups seem to have no more than 5 or 6. During interviews, people here say their sport is not growing or that it's leveling off. But after the microphone is put away, one man shakes his head and tells me his sport has been on the decline since the end of World War II.
I don't know if this is going to be good enough for her, but...
Walking into the Roller Palace for the evening dance session is like stepping 50 years back in time. Women sit at round plastic tables in front of the snack bar, putting the final touches on their hairspray and makeup. There are men here, too, mercifully excluded from the primping. The skaters compete in age groups, from the 8 and under primary division to the 55 and older veterans. But the kids' dance events are scheduled for Sunday morning, and most of the Saturday evening crowd is closer to 60 than to 16.
This is veteran solo, uh-huh. And you have to be 55 or older to skate it.
Okay.
And men and women can skate.
Dee Dee McLeod is lined up at the far end of the rink, waiting for her turn to compete. The judges will watch her body posture, feet placement, and form as she goes through the pre-choreographed steps of her event. I ask what aspect of her routine she'll be focusing on during her skate. Without losing a beat, she smiles and says, having fun.
Introducing the skaters in flight number 5 from the Royal Kingdom Teams, where I'm skating club number 268, Odelia McLeod.
Dee Dee skates first in her group, starting with a short original opening before beginning the prescribed dance steps. Her arms stretch out to her sides, like a ballet dancer, and her feet cross over each other in a smooth gliding motion. Like the other dancers, Dee Dee stares serenely upwards, not watching her feet, and smiles broadly. Dee Dee won't win this event. She won't even place, but it's quite clear she's having fun.
So you know, the public cover is all set and ready to go for all your kitchen needs.
Also at the far end of the rink, a professional photographer has set up his equipment, complete with a large fabric backdrop and umbrella lights, just like at a high school prom. It's been a few decades since Bob Quinzani's attended a school dance, but he poses proudly for his photo in a dapper black skating outfit with hot pink trim.
This is a two-piece skating outfit. And it's decorated with sequins and jewels that my wife spends hours and hours and hours putting on there. The idea is to reflect the light that's out there. This is my wife, Gloria. We've been married 49 years in May. We've been skating almost all of 49 years.
You know what? I'm very impressed that you have a husband who's not afraid to wear pink.
Oh, he wears pink. I think it's lovely.
Gloria's quick to point out that one of her pros designed the outfits. Notice I said one of her pros. The Quinzanis employ several people to help them reach their goal of placing at the Nationals. So they must practice a lot, right?
Not enough.
Well, no, not really enough. We skate probably at least 3 times a week.
3 times.
And yep. Maybe 4. As it gets closer to Nationals in July, we'll pick up the pace and put in a little more time.
Does it make for a good, strong marriage, all that skating?
Yeah, we've been married 49 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, without any breaks, huh?
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
Bob and Gloria might not have taken any breaks from skating or each other, but Hal Hermani can't say the same. Hal was a competitive skater in New Jersey in the 1940s. He made the States and Nationals in 1943 and 44. For impact, he reminds me that was the year Franklin D. Roosevelt instituted the March of Dimes.
And then my partner drifted away and got married. So for the next 2.5 years, I skated with Betty Lytell. Do you know who she is?
No.
She's the Sonia Henny of roller skating.
For those who might need a reminder, Sonia Henny won 3 consecutive Olympic figure skating gold medals in the 1920s and 30s. Her success made her a celebrity. It's hard to imagine any of today's artistic roller skaters as celebrities, but to hear Hal tell it, things were different in the 40s.
It was wall-to-wall people just watching. When I skated in the Nationals in Detroit, Michigan, at the Arena Gardens, the people were standing, you know, like you would watch a parade. And these weren't the skaters. These were the people who came to watch.
In 1949, Hal left skating to focus on his university studies. 57 years later, at the age of 80, he decided to make a comeback. So far, he's focusing on getting his legs back. But don't worry, Hal says he still has plenty of time.
Well, I've told a lot of people I plan to be the oldest living vet from World War II. That means I've got roughly 20 more years to skate.
Well, I hope they're good skating years.
Oh, it will be. Come next year. I plan to be a winner. And I don't plan to be the only one in the event to be the winner.
For Only a Game, I'm Karen Given in Beverly, Massachusetts.
Thank you.
The Muslim American Society Olympics were held in Tampa last weekend, even as the ACC conference tournament raged. The 5th annual installment of the MAS Olympics was the biggest ever. Bobby O'Brien of member station WUSF in Tampa was there, and she has this report.
Can I get a sandwich and an ice cream sandwich?
Yeah, and a sandwich.
An ice cream truck is doing a brisk business next to the hot grassy soccer fields at the University of South Florida. But the cloudless sky and 80-degree heat has not slowed the pace of play, even though the female athletes are dressed in long-sleeved shirts, pants, and the traditional Muslim headscarf, the hijab. In fact, Samia Mubarak is thriving at this year's Muslim American Society Olympics. She scored 2 goals in the morning game as right forward for the Panama City senior girls soccer team. She loves soccer, and she loves debunking myths.
And even like for us, like Muslim women who wear the scarf, it's not a factor that, you know, it's not like a boundary from going into sports. You can still wear the hijab, you know, the scarf, and play, you know.
Samia's uncle, Salim Mubarak, smiles as he surveys 2 basketball games running simultaneously inside the University of South Florida Recreation Center. The play is fast-paced, run and gun. The skill level is about that of most youth leagues.
The team that's playing now, wearing black shirts, they came all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So far, this is the farthest city that has come. I think it's getting bigger and bigger every year.
Team spirit and sportsmanship are ideals Salim Mubarak hoped to foster when he helped establish the Muslim Games about a decade ago. The Tampa tournament started with a few Florida teams. Now the 5th annual Muslim American Society Olympics features close to 900 participants from 20 different cities, and it's open to all faiths.
And we allowed that. We said, if the player is a Christian or Jewish or anything, that's fine. They're welcome. We have standards that apply to Muslims and non-Muslims. We don't want people to shout profanity. We don't want people to fight, to violate the rules.
Mubarak is an avid basketball fan who plays several times a week, yet he says the love of sports isn't the only reason the Muslim American Society of Tampa hosts the games.
One of our objectives as an organization, not just the tournament, is to keep the youth busy in something that's wholesome. Wholesome for the mind, wholesome for the body. Because our worst enemy is youth, a lot of free time, and, you know, they have nothing to do.
Muhammad Salih is president of MAS in Tampa. He says that this year he had to turn away 5 to 6 teams. Right now, the MAS uses gymnasiums and playing fields at Tampa's University of South Florida and the city of Temple Terrace, and they're at capacity. Salih says he's helping the Muslim American Society's 50-plus chapters organize similar events all around the country and would like to see regional games, with the national playoffs taking place in Tampa. But one of Celie's goals is to break down stereotypes.
A lot of people will have the label, okay, Muslims only, they do five prayers a day, they do the fasting, there is no fun in their life. Well, this is part of the fun that we do and we enjoy as well.
But prayers are not ignored. After last Saturday's senior boys' elimination game between the Miami Islamic School team and Tampa's Running Rebels, the sound of bouncing basketballs gave way to the quiet hum of fluorescent lights. Prayer rugs are rolled out on the gym floor, and Muslim men kneel to pray.
Please turn off your cell phone. Sami Allahu liman hamida.
Prayer takes place at both the men's and women's venues. The athletes range in age from 9, with the oldest players in their early 30s.
Allahu Akbar.
The gym at the Temple Terrace Recreation Center is split by a blue curtain. A volleyball game rages on one side, a basketball game on the other. Yasmin Quadri of Fort Lauderdale has 3 daughters participating in the Muslim Olympics.
It's different because they are covering their heads, but if when they're talking, it's no difference. Yeah, because they are American kids, you know.
What's the name of your team?
Our team is 305 Hustlers.
305
Hustlers. 305.
It's the area code of Miami.
Quadri's 17-year-old daughter, Yusra, wears a black hijab, a black T-shirt over her white long-sleeve shirt, and long pants. The team jersey is decorated with a stylish orange graphic outline of the girls' team. Under it is the Spanish word caliente. Yusra says it means red hot, energetic.
I'm pumped. I'm excited. Yeah, I can't wait. I want to play my sister's team, so we can probably
end up playing sisters.
Her older sister, Sarah, plays on the women's adult team, Miami Musala. She says the combination of faith and sports should be a message to the non-Muslim community.
And especially since we're Muslim, so they must be like we're really sheltered and like we don't do anything. But then it's so like it really breaks the stereotype.
And there's another goal. According to organizer and MAS Tampa president, Salih.
We would like to have interaction with the whole community. We don't want the Muslim community to be alone and separated and looked at as a different way and labeled in different names. But basically, it's serving the Muslim youth in America to have their own tournament and having fun with it without excluding themselves from the rest of the community. We're trying to outreach with the rest of the community, but have the label of the Muslim organization to it and having fun too.
For Only a Game, I'm Bobby O'Brien in Tampa.
Here now to discuss the week's sports news is the gentleman we refer to as the real sports guy, Charlie Pierce. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Bill.
We have come to expect upsets in the first round of the NCAA basketball tournament, but were you expecting Virginia Commonwealth to oust Duke from the tournament on Thursday?
I was not expecting it in the sense of having picked the game in my various for amusement only exercises that I'm undergoing at the moment, but I was not surprised by it. This is not a very good Duke team, particularly defensively. They had no answer for Eric Maynor, and it cost them. This is a team referred to another team as a bunch of pretty leaves pretending to be a tree. This is a team with a bunch of McDonald's All-Americans that simply hasn't gelled.
What other first-round March Madness action has caught your attention?
Well, there was the first 10 minutes of the Michigan State Marquette game, which we will not mention ever on the show again, ever, ever, ever. I was rather surprised by the fight that Davidson put up against Maryland. Although as a longtime fan of Del Curry, the father of Davidson star Steve Curry, if there's any proof to a genetic link to jump shooting, he's got it. And quite honestly, I think we now have to start wondering whether or not the game has passed Bob Knight by. His teams get to the tournament, and they simply don't play very well. Boston College is a good team, not a great team, and they had no problems with it.
The NBA rolled out the proverbial dandy on Wednesday night when the Dallas Mavericks played the Phoenix Suns. Isn't it a shame that the San Antonio Spurs couldn't be part of that game,
you can't
too?
I think the people who get giddy about college basketball at this time of year should sit down and watch that tape to see what real high-level basketball is all about. Amari Stoudemire coming back from a cataclysmic knee injury this year, 41 points, absolutely unstoppable. A great game, as we've come to expect them, from Steve Nash. And a really terrific kind of gutsy thing from Dallas, who hung there to the very last minute. If we could find a way for these two teams to play for the NBA championship without and ignore that messy Eastern Conference business, we'd be in good shape.
Elsewhere, just outside the NBA, former player Tim Hardaway said this week that he doesn't hate gay people, apparently because he wished to repair his image. So, image repaired?
Well, I think he wants a career someplace outside of Dubai, basically. He said he hated gay people. Flip-flopper?
Perhaps sensing the need to deflect attention from LaFair Hardaway, Cleveland Cavaliers big man Scott Pollard said something on camera last Sunday that he apologized for on Thursday. I wonder if Commissioner Dave is spinning in his New York office.
What will we tell the children? Scott Pollard looked into the camera and said, "Hey, kids, do drugs." You know,
an unambiguous message.
I understand, but I mean, if anybody doesn't realize that that's a joke, I realize the various suits have to go harumphing after it. But the idea that we have not one but two news stories about this particular event is really silly.
Nike, makers of much NBA apparel, has trotted out a crocodile skin sneaker with 18-karat gold lace tags. And since the new shoe was unveiled in London, it costs £1,400. So can I put you down for a pair?
Just stop it.
Just me or Nike?
Stop it, Nike. Just stop it. Make your shoes out of whatever it was you used to make your shoes out of. Leave the anacondas and crocodiles alone and take the 18-karat gold lace tags and start paying some of your workers in Vietnam.
During football's offseason, the NFL has been conducting a publicized examination of its player conduct policies. Charlie, will the league follow through with this?
Oh, I'm sure it will, since the league and the Players Association are virtually speak with the same mind. But, I mean, there are a couple of high-profile problems, and now they'll have a conduct policy. People get suspended for being around people who shoot off guns in strip joints.
Bowie Kuhn, Major League Baseball's commissioner from 1969 until 1984, passed away on Thursday. He was 80 years old. What are your memories of Mr. Kuhn's stewardship?
What's the great line, standing athwart history, calling stop? He was wrong about Curt Flood. He was wrong about Charlie Finley. He was wrong about George Steinbrenner. He was wrong about almost everything. God rest his soul. If he goes into the Baseball Hall of Fame before Marvin Miller, it will prove that the Hall of Fame is a worthless organization, even to me, who doesn't need a lot of proof in that regard right now.
This week, Sammy Sosa made the Texas Rangers 40-man roster. So, an inspiration to Rafael Palmeiro, Mark McGwire, Jose Canseco, they're all coming back to the bigs?
I don't know. Sammy Sosa's going to come back and try to rehabilitate his image, I guess. I don't see much of a future on it. You know, he's hitting the balls off the bag of groceries, guys. We'll see.
Pete Rose initially lied about betting on baseball. Then he lied about how often he bet on baseball. This week he said that as manager of the Cincinnati Reds, he bet on the team every night. So now we know he's an idiot as well as a liar, right? Anything more we should conclude about Pete Rose?
Hey, what have people been saying for almost 10 years? Just confess, Pete. We'll forgive you. All right, there it is. Forgive him. Put him on the ballot right now. Here we go.
Done. The Pittsburgh Penguins are staying in Pittsburgh.
Oh, boy!
So, how are fans in Las Vegas and Kansas City going to get their hockey fixes?
Well, in Las Vegas, they're going to go to the sportsbook and bet on it. And the ones in Kansas City are going to get their hockey fixes from minor league hockey and, I guess, watching the Chiefs' defensive backfield.
Italy won last summer's Soccer World Cup, but this week FIFA, the sports governing body, announced that Argentina is the number one team in the world. Shouldn't Argentina have to beat Italy to achieve that distinction?
One would think so, but I'm still concerned about our lads dropping to number 30.
Just where they belong,
that
I'm afraid.
That is, by the way, that is the territory referred to in most polls as other teams receiving votes.
Relegation looms.
We are a nation headed for that great NIT in the sky.
And finally, Charlie, the state of New Mexico has banned cockfighting.
No!
And I will congratulate you if you can tell me the one state where that activity is still legal, I guarantee.
Well, see, now you can't give me easy hints like that. Fighting chickens, spodiote, fighting chickens. It's Louisiana.
Yep.
And apparently they're moving toward banning it now, although there's some serious debate in the state legislature about whether or not to ban cockfighting.
Well, of course, also the question in Louisiana would be, if they ban it, will there be any less of it? Charlie Pierce writes for the Boston Sunday Globe magazine. He joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks for listening to Only a Game. Please check your local listings for the NPR station nearest you to carry our show. And please visit our website, onlyagame.org.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with super handling all-wheel drive. More at Acura.com/RDX.